Hi, we're the Delicates.
I'm Lee.
I'm Peg.
And I'm Dee.
We listen to Ronnie. Ronnie remembers the oldies, the 50s and 60s. We listen to Ronnie. Ronnie remembers the ballads, the rock tunes, the songs we all dance to, the girl groups and boy groups, solos and doo-wops. He talks to the stars of the stage shows and sock hops. We listen to Ronnie. Ronnie remembers the oldies, the 50s and 60s.
Meow, 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 meow.
Gentlemen, just for the fun of it, Linda, November.
Behind the glass in the studio, put on the headset, here we go. It's a tab, it's a Sprite, Pepsi, Green Coke is it. No matter which way you sing it, it's the same old you know. Let's run it down now, once or twice. Okay, we're gonna take one. Yeah, that was nice. Maybe just one more with a little more style. Take 28, could you add some style? I'm a studio singer, I do chicken rides. If you know what I mean, I'm a studio singer, I bring good things to life. But I'm terrible in the spotlight, never hear the sweet applause. And the band goes home before I even get there. Do I sing the best I'm able? A platinum voice without a label. The years I'm brought off, how they rack up. I'm the empress of the backup. Whoa, 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 whoa. You hear my voice the whole day long. Radio and TV, I tell it all in a song. This part is for you, make a low kill or two. You may know my voice, but my name, Linda who? I love to sing, so I'd never complain, but I sure wouldn't mind just a morsel of fame. Barry, Melissa, and Luther did fine. Sure would be nice if I were next.
It's taken me a while to figure out how to introduce the two people that I am going to introduce right now. They are very special to me, and I thought the best way to introduce Linda November, and that I believe is her real name, was to play that particular recording that she did as part of a show a few years ago called, very appropriately, November in May, because she did it in May, and she's November. Linda, are you there?
I am, sir. How are you?
I am fine, and I actually see you.
I don't see you, haha.
That's a good thing, because I have a face made for radio, and I even have a voice made for mime.
But I'm bummed.
But I see you, and I see a strange man. To your right, and to my left, and he's waving at the camera. And who is the strange?
He stays right. Very strange.
Very strange.
If you try to Google him, you're probably not going to find him unless you know how to spell his name, so we're going to straighten that out right now. It's pronounced Artie Schreck.
Just like the monster.
Just like the monster. But it's actually spelled, how do you spell your last name?
S-C-H-R-O-E-C-K.
S-C-H-R-O-E-C-K.
That's right.
And Artie Schreck is one of the top arrangers in the business. And I didn't tell you who Linda is, other than the fact that she's a studio singer. She's more than just a studio singer. She is a studio singer who, by the way, has recorded about 22,000 jingles. Did I get that right? 22,000?
Absolutely, you did.
Well, I get a gold star.
Well, it was documented, as a matter of fact, by, I think, ABC many, 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 many years ago.
When you were on the Regis Golden Show.
Right, when I was on Regis, and they asked me, and they came back with this number, and I went, it sounds right.
Well, we are going to, in this show, answer the question, who is Linda November? Who is Artie Schreck? We're going to talk about the unsung heroes, and I mean unsung heroes. Most of you out there think of hit records, and you think of singers, and you think of songwriters, but the story is more than that. There's backup singers, And there's arrangers. You've heard of producers. Producers get a lot of play, but arrangers don't get enough play. Is that right, Artie?
Yes, they don't.
Well said.
That's all you had?
That's all I had.
That's all he had. That's short and sweet.
That's him.
This is Ronnie, and talking today to Calvin Coolidge.
Yes. Arrangers get credit on the records and so forth, but nobody knows who they are because they're always the guy behind the scenes.
Right.
You know what Artie says sometimes? He gets so bugged at me sometimes. I say, oh, you know, he did this famous arrangement for this famous record, and Artie says, they think that he's arranging chairs. What is an arrangement? People don't understand.
We're going to find out. In fact, I am going to ask you some questions, Artie, about your craft in a few moments, but how about ladies first?
Sure.
Okay. And
he'll never get to talk.
Well, anyway, did I say who I am? I don't think I even said who I am. I am Ronnie Allen, and I'm...
Thank you.
And I am so pleased to be talking to two people I respect so very much. And we're going to now get started with the meat and potatoes of this interview. Now that we're done with the small talk, of course, we're not going to really be done with the small talk. This entire interview is probably going to be small talk. But Linda November, that is your real name?
Yes, it is. Linda Ellen November.
And Linda, you actually did a thing in the show. You were doing like a couple of songs from the Fantastics. Could you do a little bit of what you did with the Try to Remember, you know, with
Sure, I could try to remember. I'm Linda November.
That's it. That's what I wanted.
I thought Jones and Schmidt made a terrible mistake not writing that lyric.
It just fit in so well.
Well, I mean, how could you resist it? It's just perfect fodder, you know.
The name Linda November is a name not necessarily recognized until this show. Once we do this show, of course, you're going to be recognized by everybody around the world, Linda, but don't be nervous.
Sorry.
The world knows her already. She's a legend in her own mind and mine.
But so many people, hundreds, thousands, millions of people have heard you over the years without knowing who the heck you were.
Right.
Because every time they turned on their TV set or radio, they heard one of your jingles.
That's right.
And if they weren't listening to one of your jingles, they were probably listening to your voice as a backup singer on a hit record.
Precisely so.
So it's amazing. Your career did not start out as a singer, but you started out wanting to be something else. What was that?
A Jewish stripper. No, I'm joking.
Put it on.
No, I actually thought I would be a concert pianist. I started playing at the age of 4 by ear because I was too young to have ever known how to read music at that point. And I really wanted to be a concert pianist. And then one day I decided that I wanted to have long nails and I said, the heck with it.
I wanted to ask you, I mean, I've heard about playing piano by ear. Isn't it difficult to play those notes with your ear?
Yes, it's very difficult, especially your earrings get in the way.
So you had two problems. You had your earrings get in the way and your nails get in the way.
All right, now cut that out, Ronnie.
People know what we really mean by ear.
And I had perfect pitch. We didn't know it when I was a baby, but we subsequently found out when I was about 9 or 10, and that's why I played so well.
Perfect.
By ear. That's when they say that most people is because they have perfect pitch.
There's an old expression that nothing is perfect, and that's true. Nothing is perfect except Linda's pitch.
There are people in this world, I don't know what the percentage is, but those of us who have perfect pitch, and all it is a photographic memory. And if you are not a musician, then you don't know that you've got perfect pitch. You can just memorize stuff. But when you've played an instrument, and usually it's piano, and somebody plays a note and you're standing in the other end of the room and they play it and you say, or a chord, you know, like 5 or 6 notes together, if you will, and they say, what notes am I playing? And you say, oh, a C and F, a G flat and B flat or whatever. They say, oh dear, you've got perfect pitch. So, and to me, the world is a pitch. Our house is a pitch. The car is a pitch. It's amazing. I live my life by pitches, which is a very insane way to have to deal with things, but I can't help it because that's how I hear things,
Would you say that life is a pitch?
It is. I mean, the world is too. What a Hardy has a look on his eyes.
Life is a son of a...
Oh, a son of a... Okay. Moving right along. When you have perfect pitch, though, that could be difficult because if you're doing a studio session and any of the instruments is just slightly off, that probably drives you bananas.
Yeah, it's true.
What? Tell him about Burt Bacharach when he's to change key.
Oh, Burt Bacharach used to do this to me all the time. Because I read music like a son of a gun. I mean, I'm one of the best sight readers in this industry.
Right.
And we'd walk in and he'd say, oh, I had to change the key, so we're going to transpose it. Well, of course, I couldn't transpose it because when I see a note, I have to sing it. You tell me here's a B flat, let's say. I had to sing a B flat. And then we had to lower it a whole tone, so I had to sing an A flat. Well, no, I couldn't. So he had my part recopied specifically for me so I could read it in the key that we were doing it.
Right. Wow.
Bert used to walk in and they used to have such fun with me. And unbeknownst to me, he had in fact had my part recopied just so that I wouldn't be agonized because I would have to sit and rewrite it quickly. And I said, I'm not rewriting it. So you either do it in the original key or you know, then they would give me the part recopied. Because my teachers never taught me movable do, which they should have. So when there's a movable do, you can switch it and then you could read it in that key and or that clef. But in those days, they never bothered to teach me that. So unfortunately, when something happened like that, they had to just make sure that I had it in the right key.
Artie, do you have anything to add to what you just said?
Not necessarily. Most people who have relative pitch, which I have, they can look at music, as long as they're not playing it on the piano or anything, they can move the, like Linda said, the do. In other words, do is mostly C, but if they change the key, like say to B flat, do becomes B flat, and you can adjust that way. Linda reads the music. The rest of us don't have. We read the intervals, or the pitch of the intervals.
What I would like to do is play one of the songs that you sang at the November in May. Now, was that a single concert, or did you have an extended run with that?
I had done the show down at the ballroom in Manhattan. I had done it, I guess, I don't know, a weekend, I think, or no, like maybe a week or so. And then we decided to shoot it. We had shot it there, but we needed to shoot it professionally, so we did it at RCA Studios on, what was it, 44th Street, up on the 6th floor in their Studio C, where they have a very big stage.
Right.
We had to bring in lights. Of course, we had the sound because we had the booth there.
Right.
And then we invited an audience, and I invited, I don't know, about 40, 50 people. About 200 people showed up.
Yeah, it looks like much more than 40 or 50.
Yeah, I think it was over 300 people, and we had a quick call out for chairs. I mean, it was hysterical. We did a dress rehearsal that afternoon, and then we did the live performance. And it was something that we decided we wanted to have for... Prosperity.
Good word.
So that's why we did that.
Right. And one of the songs is a song called Nanny Nanny. What's the full title of that?
It's Time for My Fix.
It's Time for My Fix. It's kind of funny because I wrote you in an email. I thought it was something called Pretty Little Garden.
Pretty Little Garden, you said.
Yeah. And then you wrote back and you said, Nanny, Nanny, it's time for my fix. And I thought you were talking to me.
I realized that.
That's the title of the song.
It starts, Pretty Little Garden, Pretty Little Garden. That's why you said Pretty Little Garden.
Yeah.
Pretty little garden, pretty little flowers, pretty little spot to while away the hours. How the time goes by, my, it's 6:30. Nanny, oh, Nanny, it's time for my fix. Everything in nature goes its little way. The birds are eating berries and the cows are chewing hay. The bee's on the rosebud, that's where he wants to feed, you see. The bee does not. Like I love the weed. All the little flowers are flying in the blue. And when my nanny gets here, I'll be flying too. So, honey nanny darling, honey nanny sweet, hark, I hear the patter of my nanny feet. Here comes nanny now with my mild morphine. Life is simply great when you're a sweet 16.
Oh, I love that one. That's so cute. Let's hear it again. No. Like, we got to do more shows, so we would have to hear other stuff as well. Boy, you have done so many things. We want to point out that you have a Richard Rodgers connection. Could you tell me in 10 seconds or less what that Richard Rodgers connection was?
What are you, for sugar me, 10 seconds or less?
I'm kidding. Give you at least 30 seconds.
I went to Broadway auditions, and they were always cattle calls. You had to have an equity card in order to go to an equity audition. So I would go to all these auditions, and I was kind of a fat, ugly kid as opposed to being a glamour queen nowadays. I would be, they take one look at me and say, next. And so I went to my uncle, Saul. He was a doctor. He was a podiatrist. And this guy came in who happened to be the entertainment critic for the Dallas Morning News. And he said, Linda, let's sing him a song. So the guy's in the whirlpool and his feet are being massaged. And I'm singing, love her when I'm there. The guy says, wait, I'm making a call. Next thing I know, I'm in a limousine. Make a long story short, I go to Richard Rodgers' house, and they send me upstairs to this beautiful apartment house in the penthouse, and this man is standing there when the doors open, the elevator doors, and he said, how do you do? And I went, oh my God, it's Richard Rodgers. I was a child. I was 16 or 17 or something. And Dorothy Rodgers, his wife, came out, and he said, I understand you are spectacular. What would you like to sing for me? What shall I play for you? I said, oh, I'll play for myself. I said this to Richard Rodgers, like a little yutz that I was. And he said, you're going to play for yourself. I said, yeah. What would you like to sing? I said, your wonderful song that you wrote with Mr. Lorenz Hart, Lover. He said, and what key do you do it in? And I said, D, the original key that's in your Rodgers and Hart song. But he said, is that so? Please, I'm intrigued. Have a seat. I sat down at this gorgeous Steinway piano. And I proceeded to play verbatim what he had written musically and vocally and the lyrics. And I finished. She said, oh, my God, I can't believe it. I've got to call your mother. The next thing he knows, he's speaking to Eleanor November, my precious, beloved mother. And she says, oh, yeah, sure, you're pulling my leg. Who did you guys? He said, Eleanor, this is Richard Rodgers. This is my phone number. Phone me back if you don't believe me. I'm not a masher. And so my mother called back, and he said, your daughter is my next protege, and da-da-da-da-da. So they had to do a whole number on me to make me into somebody that looked the part as well. And from there, the rest was history.
Aren't you glad you didn't ask for a long story?
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty good. I mean, there's still more to the story.
And that involves a well-known Broadway show.
He sent me to all auditions at his protege, and they said, Miss November, you sing beautifully, you read the script beautifully, but you're a bit overweight, or the glasses don't work, your hair's too dark, you look too Jewish. And this happened constantly, and finally he said, we're going to remake this kid. So they did. I had my nose fixed, and I got contact lenses, and I lost about 70 pounds, and they dyed my hair and straightened my hair. And so I went to my first audition after this extraordinary transformation, and it was Fiddler on the Roof. And they said, Miss November, you're magnificent, but you don't look Jewish enough. And I said, my old nose is in a jar. I can run downtown and get it. And that was that. So after I went home and did my Sarah Hartburn, tried to take two baby bear aspirins and end it all, then they sent me to do an industrial at the Coliseum for the Ford Motor Company. And there it was the famous Cy Coleman and Carolyn Lee, people who wrote Witchcraft and 900 other brilliant songs. And Dick Williams, Andy's brother, my dear friend, still alive and kicking. And Ray Charles of the Ray Charles Singers, who's just as much alive and kicking with Perry Como. And Phil Ramone. And they said, oh, you're a star. I said, no. I just want to be a group singer. So they said, if that's what you want to be, fine. Ray Charles said, I'll have my contractor call you. And Dick Williams called me for a job. And the next thing you know, I was doing record dates. And I was singing with a group of 25 of the greatest musician singers in the world. And it was the most exciting thing for me. And they're going to pay me to read music and sing with these people. And then Ray Charles put me down on the fourth chair with Lillian Clark, who is now gone. She was married to Cy Oliver. She was one of the Clark sisters.
And right around that time, your voice was heard on a Frank Sinatra record.
The World We Knew.
Let's play a little bit of that recording called The World We Knew and listen to what's called, is it a soprano obbligato?
Yes, it's called an obbligato, exactly.
Over and over, I keep going over the world. Once when you inconceivable, that unbelievable world we knew when we two were in love.
Ray Charles said, who is that soprano? That's magnificent. That's unbelievable.
Yes.
It's the hippest soprano I ever heard. So somebody said, it's Linda November. And I walk into the next date with Ray Charles, and he says to me, why didn't you tell me that was you? I said, I don't know, you didn't ask. He said, what the hell are you doing in the fourth chair? I said, you put me there. And so he moved me up to the lead chair.
How many years did you spend as part of the Ray Charles Singers?
Well, you know, we were all freelance singers. We were all hired on a job-to-job basis. I'm sure you know that,
right,
Ronnie.
Even though it was the Ray Charles Singers, you were studio singers, really.
We were, exactly. So the point is, you know, there were other singers. They wouldn't necessarily all be the same people. Somebody was sick, somebody died, somebody was on vacation. So you had a roster of singers that you would use. I worked with Ray from 62, 63 to probably 67, and then we would do the Como Show, the Kraft Music Hall.
Your voice is on the record, Love Me With All Your Heart. This was a very big hit for the Ray Charles Singers. One of those Ray Charles Singers is Linda November. Ray Charles Singers and Love Me With All Your Heart, and I have a Ray Charles Singer right here. That's Linda November. And while this was going on, of course, you got into doing other things.
The rest was history, and then the first jingle call and what the money was, and my mother said, find out how we do more of these. And it took me 7 years to become an overnight success, and I sang 22,000 commercials in 32 years, made over $100, and had a phenomenal career. Before I sang jingles exclusively, I did record dates with every megastar you can mention.
You sent me a list of the top 25 commercials that you have done. You could just do a little impromptu version of some of these. Is that okay?
Ronnie, I thought that you were going to let me sing all 22,000 of them, and then we'd have cake and coffee.
Oh, okay. Well, give me another year, and we'll finish the show.
Okay, sure.
Now, David Letterman only has a top 10 list. We got a top 25 list. We're out lettering Letterman here.
Okay.
The number 25 commercial, ladies and gentlemen, is the Prudential commercial. You'd sing a little bit of...
Get a piece of the rock.
Good. Okay. Number 24 is Exxon. Get a piece of the Exxon.
The well is running smooth and silent. Exxon, Exxon. That was it. Running smooth and silent. Running with the tiger.
This is much better than having the original commercial. We have Linda here doing them live.
Yeah, and try to dig them up. They're all on the 7.5 IPS or 15
I know.
Play them now.
But you've heard them, and I worked for AT&T, by the way, over 30 years. AT&T is kind of close to my heart, and number 23 on your list is AT&T. Do you remember what you did for AT&T?
Reach out and touch someone. Reach out, call up and just say hi. That was it.
Great. Oh, everybody knows that one.
Sure do.
Rolling right along, we get to number 22, and we're doing like five of these at a time, and we're going to kind of split up the show that way. And number 22 is Greyhound.
Go Greyhound and leave the driving to us. Go Greyhound and leave the driving to us.
Cha-cha-cha. That was great. No, I just that's part of... That's part of Ronnie Allen's arrangement. I just felt that there should be a...
Keep it in.
Number 21 is Kraft.
And America spells cheese. K-R-A-F-T. Kraft.
Okay. So that's number 25 through number 21. A lot of people don't know that you were actually, even though you were never billed as such, but you and I believe Tony Wine and another singer, you were actually the original Dawn.
Yes, we were. We were in the studio and we were called to be Dawn. Well, it wasn't Dawn, it was just Tony Orlando. Then they decided to call it Dawn, and then they decided to go on the road. And, of course, Tony and I were doing wonderfully well in the business, and we weren't about to go on the road and sing stuff.
But the first hit was Candida, and it's you and Tony Wine. Was there another girl on that
show? I don't remember. I don't know if Robin Grion was on it or one of the guys came in, Alan. I don't remember.
But it was you and Tony Wine on this record.
Yes, absolutely.
Let's listen to a little bit of this, and I love this record. This may be my personal favorite Dawn record. This is Candida.
The stars won't come out if they know that you're about, 'cause they couldn't match the glow of your eyes. Window, who am I? Just an ordinary guy, trying hard to win me first prize. Oh, Candida, we could make it together. The further from here, girl, the better. Where the air is fresh and clean. Candida, just take my hand.
When that record came out, the billing on the record just said Dawn. Tony Orlando's name was not on the record because he was trying initially to hide the fact that he was doing it, as if nobody knows that's Tony Orlando, you know.
Yeah, right. Well, you know that Tony Wine wrote Candida.
And that was the other Tony. A lot of Tonys involved.
It's you and I.
Tony Wine wrote Candida, Tony Orlando sang it. And to prove that Dawn was not going to be a one-hit wonder, you did a song called Knock 3 Times, and you and Tony were on this record, too.
That's right, yeah. That was Levine and Brown.
Levine and Brown wrote that one, and we're going to listen to a little bit of that one. This was a number one hit, and it features on that particular record Tony Wine and Linda November.
Too.
It's even more fun when they make number one, like that one did.
Now, we didn't make any money on that, we just get paid for the session. Those days, you never got any royalty.
And by the way, what started out as a kind of anonymous group became a real group shortly thereafter when singers Thelma Hopkins and Joyce Vincent joined Tony Orlando. They became Dawn, or Tony Orlando and Dawn, and they did touring, personal appearances, etc., etc. But it all began with you and Tony and Tony and another girl and probably another guy and whoever was in the studio at that time for those first two records, Candida and Knock 3 Times. I am Ronnie Allen, and I am talking to two very wonderful people, wonderfully talented people as well, Linda November and Artie Schreck. Linda, you were not born in November, were you?
My father, Julius November, was born in November, but I was born in October.
Artie, we're going to move to you right now. Speaking of Mr. Sinatra, you wrote a song for Frank Sinatra called Here's to the Band. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Some friends of mine came to my house and said, we have this song called Here's to the Musicians, and we'd like to get it to Frank Sinatra because he always gives credit to the musicians, the arrangers, and the songwriters when he performs. And it would be a great idea for him to do a song like that, giving credit. But it was a kind of a Barry Manilow kind of song, and I said to them, Frank Sinatra probably wouldn't want to do a song like this. He'd done a couple of songs like that, but he probably wants to do something. When you think of musicians and him giving credit to musicians, he would probably like to do it as a swing tune, like all the records he made for Capitol, I Got You Under My Skin and stuff like that, even New York, New York. So I said, and I think Here's to the Musicians is a little bit too much for to say, and it would be hipper if he said, Here's to the Band. So I said, give me your lead sheet and everything, and I'll take a look at it. Well, in 24 hours, walking along, going in between record dates or jingle dates and stuff like that, I actually came up with a lyric and a song called Here's to the Band as a swing song. And I presented to the two of them, and they flipped out over it, and we got it to Sinatra. And Sinatra had it in his briefcase for about 2 years, and finally a publisher, Al Gallego, heard the song. He was my song publisher. And he said, wow, this is something. So we called Nancy Sinatra and had her come over to the house. And Nancy heard the song. She says, I got to call my dad right away. She goes, you got to do the song. And Sinatra said, I got it with me. I said, please listen to it and record it as soon as you can. It's another My Way. It's another whatever, New York, New York. He finally recorded it. I was at the session. And that's how it went down. William B. Williams was the first guy to present it on the radio from WNEW.
Now, who were your co-writers?
Alfred Natoli and Sharman Howe.
And this is that great song, The Chairman of the Board, or Old Blue Eyes, Francis Albert Sinatra. Here's to the Band.
Dedicate this song to all of them. I've sung with the best, and I've had it all. I've gone from neighborhood saloons to Carnegie Hall. I've been down and out, and I've been in demand, but I wouldn't have made it without them. Here's to the band. Those magical notes, those musical pearls, I've sung with all the counts, the dukes, the kings and the earls. And the experience, I have to say, was grand. But I wouldn't have made it without them. Here's to the band. I wouldn't have made it without.
One thing always impressed me about Frank Sinatra is how he did give credit. Among many things that was special about Frank Sinatra, that was one of the most special things. We're going to talk in a few moments about arranging records, and we're going to hear a fantastic arrangement that you did, Artie, for Liza Minnelli on Teach Me Tonight at one of her shows. But before we get to that, let's get back to Linda. We're going to hear a couple of marriage songs or wedding songs or whatever. I think you know what's coming up. There's a song by Rodgers and Hart, and this is from your December in May, and people just have to hear this one.
November in May.
Did I? Should I leave that in or should I take it? I said December in May. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you and good night. We just lost her. No. What an embarrassment. November in May. Listen, I got the May part correct. You know, actually, I'm doing this in a special way, and I'm actually seeing them on my screen here, and your husband just walked out. I guess he just got disgusted with me. All right.
He went out to have a pop or two.
Oh, okay. How about November and January? Tom Lehrer did a song called Rickety Tickety Tin, which is kind of a sick little song, and Rodgers and Hart wrote a song that some people could say is kind of a sick little song, but it's all in fun. It's absurd, right?
No, it's brilliant, and you know, it's over 70-something years old now. It was one of the most brilliant things that Larry Hart ever wrote, I think. I mean, it was absolutely. I just think the brilliance of his idea. You know, I killed all these people to keep my love alive.
I've been married, and often I've sighed. I'm never a bridesmaid, I'm always the bride. I never divorce them, I haven't the heart. Yet remember these sweet words, till death do us part. I married many men, a ton of them, because I wasn't true to none of them. Because I bumped off every one of them to keep my love alive. Sir Paul was frail, he looked a wreck to me. At night he was a horse bed next to me. So I performed an appendectomy to keep my love alive. Sir Tom is having insomnia. He couldn't sleep at night. I bought a little arsenic. He's sleeping now all right. Sir Philip played the harp. I cut the thing. I crowned him with a top to bust the thing. And now he plays where harps are just the thing to keep my love alive. I thought Sir George had possibilities, but his dissertation made me ill at ease. And when I'm ill at ease, I kill at ease to keep my love alive. Sir Charles came from a sanatorium and yelled for drink in my emporium. I mixed one drink, he's in memoriam.
To keep my love alive. And that was from, what was the show?
A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, and I suppose it was 1940-something.
Now, there's another song that has to do with love. You have a website called www.jinglelady.com, JINGLELADY.com. And go to your website, and you click on links, and then you can get to this YouTube video of you doing this particular song. It's a Stephen Sondheim song, and what's it called?
It's called Not Getting Married Today, and it's from Company. It's another masterpiece.
And she sings this at about 200 miles an hour.
Yeah, I do.
Oh,
here because of everybody here. I want to thank you all for coming to the wedding. I'd appreciate you going even more. I mean, you must have lots of better things to do and not a word of the poor room and the poor. You know the man I'm going to marry, but I'm not, because it wouldn't ruin anyone as wonderful as he is. Thank you all for the gifts and the flowers. Thank you all. Now it's back to the showers. Don't tell Paul, but I'm not getting married today. Look, I don't know what you're waiting for, a wedding. What's a wedding? It's a prehistoric ritual where everybody promises fidelity forever, which is maybe the most horrifying word I ever heard, which is followed by a honeymoon when suddenly you feel like you saddled with a nut and want to kill you, which you should. Thanks a bunch, but I'm not getting married. Go have lunch, because I'm not getting married. You've been grand, but I'm not getting married. Don't just stand there, I'm not getting married. And don't tell Paul, but I'm not getting married today. Go, can't you go? Why is nobody listening? Goodbye, go and cry at another person's wake. If you're quick for a kick, you could pick up a christening. But please, on my knees, there's a human life at stake. Listen, everybody, I'm afraid you didn't hear. Do you want to see a crazy lady fall apart in front of you? It isn't only Polo. We're ruining his life. You know, both of us are losing our identity. The telephone, my analyst about it, and he said to see a Monday, but by my healthy floating in the hunt with the other garbage, I'm not well, so I'm not getting married. You've been 12, but I'm not getting married. Clear the hall, because I'm not getting married. Thank you all, but I'm not getting married. And don't tell Paul, but I'm not getting married today.
Well, if you enjoyed listening to that, you got to go and watch the YouTube video of that. Did you ever mess up that song? I mean, you did it absolutely perfect, but do you ever screw up?
You know, I learned it very slowly. When I was in my car, we had made a track, and it was "Part of Me Is Everybody Here," because if everybody's here, I want to thank you all for coming. This "Part of Me Is Everybody Here," because if everybody's here, part of me is everybody here. And I worked on it for months and months, and finally one day I'm driving, I almost crashed my car on the LIE, and "Part of Me Is Everybody Here," because everybody, and I finally was able to do it.
You did it, and it was wonderful. And we're going to go now to a few more commercials. We'll do 19 through 10. We'll do another 10 of them right now.
Wait a minute. Didn't we stop at 21?
21. We're going to do 20. You're right. Just keep me honest here.
Photographic memory. I remember everything you say. So be careful.
Okay. Do you remember what you had for breakfast today?
I had a half a grapefruit, a grain fruit a few minutes ago, and I'm so hungry. I can't wait to be finished. I got to go get a sandwich at Quiznos or something.
God, I call you December a few more times. We'll be finished before I want to be, I'm sure.
Be absolutely correct.
Number 20, ladies and gentlemen, is Nabisco. What'd you do for Nabisco?
We sang it in every key and made more money than you could ever believe. It was Nabisco. Ting!
Okay, Chef Boyardee is at number 19.
Boy, oh, Boyardee. Boy, oh, Boyardee. Chef Boyardee. That was a very short, abbreviated version.
Well, that's okay. And I hear some Snickers out there in the audience. And speaking of Snickers, number 18 is...
Snickers satisfies you. Oh, boy, I love Snickers. Oh, God, I love them.
Okay. Number 17 is a rapper, Eminem.
Eminem is a world of fun, a world of pure milk chocolate joy.
My name is Slim Shady, Eminem. Number 16. Oh, actually, we got a couple of gummy ones here. And number 16 is Wrigley's.
Wrigley's Spearmint Gum. Gum, gum. Wrigley's Spearmint Gum. Gum, gum.
Number 15 is Double Mint.
Double dating, double breasted, double trouble with a double E. a double play in baseball. I never understood this. Artie explained it goes 6-4-3. But the single most favorite double in the world is double good, double good, double income. We sang 6-4-3, so we're watching the World Series. He says, there it is, 6-4-3. I don't know.
Double play.
A double play.
Number 14, and we actually have three automakers at 14, 13, and 12. What an amazing coincidence. Number 14 is Ford.
Have you driven a Ford lately?
Not really, but... Oh, I'm sorry, I was just answering your question.
I only drive Lexus.
Car one time that went over the cliff.
Huh?
Really?
Yeah. A friend of mine had the car because he did the commercial, and I used to take a bus to New York because I would fall asleep on the road because of all the stuff I had to do. And so he'd loaned me his car, and he said, this is the car that went over the cliff, and I drove it back to my house.
What car went over the cliff? I don't...
That was a famous Ford commercial.
Okay. Never mind. If I wasn't on it, I don't care about it.
Hey, Artie, if she wasn't on it, it's not important. It's a nothing.
I think she was. They didn't show the film or anything.
Oh, right.
I don't even remember the film, but there were so many, my God.
Number 13 is Chevy Chase. No, it's just Chevy. Chevrolet.
It's the heartbeat of America. That's the J's Chevrolet.
Great. And number 12 is Buick.
I gotta remember all these. Wouldn't you really rather have a Buick? A Buick? A Buick?
You have a photographic memory. This should be no problem, right? You're showing that.
I gotta pull up in it. How am I doing so far?
You're doing great. In fact, would you like a Diet Pepsi? Number 11.
Oh, you see it? Now you don't. So delicious, but it won't. Oh, Diet Pepsi, one small calorie. Now you see it, now you don't. That great.
All right.
Some of these commercials you did with just your voice, some of them you did with other people, is that right? And they're very...
Solos, a lot of them were groups, yes.
All right, we're going to go to the top 10 in a few moments, and I'm sure none of you have any idea what the number one commercial could possibly be, but we'll get to it. I'm sure we're keeping people in suspense about that. And we're going to go back to Artie now, and Artie, we're going to talk about this arrangement you did for Liza Minnelli. Did she do this show in various places, or was it an extended run? What was it, for about 3 years?
The first time she did it was in Radio City Music Hall, and she opened with the song, and it's one of the rare times when the opening song gets a standing ovation.
It was the biggest thrill.
Yeah, we were in the fourth row.
And that opening song was Teach Me Tonight. This is a song that originally was a big hit by the DeCastro sisters. As a result, largely, of your arrangement, Liza took the song to a new dimension, and it was so appreciated by the audience. We're going to listen to it right now. Liza Minnelli stopping the show at the beginning of the show with Teach Me Tonight.
Shooting star goes by, I'll use that.
that star to write I love you a thousand times across the sky.
Liza Minnelli, that's Liza with a Z, and Teach Me Tonight, and I am Ronnie Allen, and I am learning a lot of stuff from Linda November and Artie Schreck. And Artie, we'll talk about now a couple of records that you did the arrangements for, and the first one is Legendary by the Jersey Boy himself, the Jersey Boy lead singer, Mr. Frankie Valli. Tell me a little bit about the arrangement that you did on Can't Take My Eyes Off You.
It was a wonderful song. It was based on the idea of Frankie doing something that, although it has a rock and roll beat to it, it was a little bit jazzier for him to do as a top 40 record. And they basically brought me in because I was a jazz arranger, and Bob Gaudio, who produced the record, he said he wanted it to be like a Stan Kenton record. So there's a lot of things in there, like the trombone, which was one of Stan Kenton's
trademarks.
So that's how that record came about. We did it in a rock beat, but the band and Frankie's singing was more jazz-oriented.
Of all the records that Frankie Valli has done over the years, a lot of people would say this is the most remembered. This session is Legendary, an arrangement by Artie Schreck. This is Frankie Valli and Can't Take My Eyes Off You.
You're just too good to be true. Can't take my eyes off you. You'd be like heaven to touch. I wanna hold you so much. At long last, love has arrived, and I thank God I'm alive. You're just too good to be true. Can't take my eyes off you. Pardon the way that I stare. There's nothing else to compare. The sight of you leaves me weak. There are no words left to speak. But if you feel like I feel, please let me know that it's real. You're just too good to be true. Can't take my eyes off you. I'm too good to be true. Can't take my eyes off you.
Can't Take My Eyes Off You, Frankie Valli. An amazing arrangement. How many instruments were on that record?
Three trumpets, French horn, trombone, I think two saxophones, and a rhythm section.
When you write arrangements, like you write an arrangement for this song, what do you have? Music sheets in front of you and you just write one instrument at a time? Is that how it's done?
Believe it or not, that's how I used to do it when I was a kid, when I was in high school. But then somebody said, you know, there's a piece of paper that you can buy with all the instruments on it called a score paper. And you can write all the things. It'll have the two saxes, the trombone, the French horn, the three trumpets. And you write them. You can see what you're doing with all the instruments all at once. And then you send it to a copyist, and the copyist writes it out for all the players.
Now, Artie had his own score paper that he would get from these specific music copying places with his name in the upper end corner, arranged by Artie Schrenk. And then he would handwrite each step on a big easel. I mean, it was enormous. I can't even...
It's like a blueprint. And then the copyist does it for all the instruments, which was much easier. I was basically a self-taught arranger. When I was in high school, I used to get bands together and write arrangements for them, each part separately. And by the time I got to the trombone part, I forgot what I wrote for the trumpets. So a score paper makes it a little bit easier.
All I could say, Artie, is you must have had a heck of a lot in your head, because being an arranger, you have to have a tremendous amount of imagination of knowing exactly where you want to go with something.
Well, that's the difference basically between an arranger and an orchestrator. An orchestrator, you'll use somebody else's ideas and write it out for the whole band. When you're an arranger, you're both arranger and orchestrator, and you have to figure out all the ideas and then put them on paper.
You arranged a song by the Cowsills called We Can Fly. Anything interesting about this one?
Yes, it was called Artie Schrenk and His Happy Harps.
His Happy Harps?
Yes, one of the reviews of the record, I think it's in Billboard, he said, an arrangement by Artie Schrenk and His Happy Harps.
Well, I'm not going to harp on that anymore. Let's just listen to it right now. A little bit of We Can Fly.
Fluffy clouds move by us.
See how the clouds move by.
See how the morning mist can hide us away.
Hide us away. And now it's so much fun.
What fun? Isn't it groovy in a daydream? Doesn't the day seem like it could never end?
And so my friend, we're one.
Maybe it's funny how I can feel so sunny
when you're beside me. We have fun.
That was a little of We Can Fly by the Cowsills, arranged by Artie Schrenk. And you've done over the years dozens of arrangements?
Sure. You know, when you have a hit record like, say, Can't Take My Eyes Off You, you get a lot of calls from people to do arrangements. So I did quite a few arrangements for different recording artists and so forth. We're not hits because...
Everybody wanted to have money and everybody wanted to make records.
Yeah, everybody wanted to make records. They usually took their grandmother's money and...
And Artie was very nice about that. A lot of times he would say, I'm sorry, I can't take your grandmother's money.
In addition to Can't Take My Eyes Off You, you also did arrangements for Four Seasons records, like I Got You Under My Skin, right?
Yes, Begging, Fell Into the Rain, quite a few of their records.
Very impressive. And right now, speaking of impressive, we're going to get back to Linda. have to ask the question, Linda. You did so many things behind the scenes. Once you started doing this, did you ever have a fierce desire to say, hey, I want to do a Broadway show, I want to do something like that, and be more in front of the public, or were you just happy to kind of make all this money in anonymity?
That's a great question, Ronnie. I adored my career. I adored really every minute of it, except when I walked out on Neil Diamond and Donald Fagen, because they tried to make me sing for so many hours that I was bloody, you know? But seriously, the only time I felt a twinge is when I went to the theater and I went to all the shows and I said, oh dear, I could have done that. I mean, I could do that. And I knew that it was just never meant to be, and I was born, you know, before my time in that genre. But, you know, it's something I had to live with. I would always get very tearful. I'd see a Julie Andrews, and I knew I could have played Eliza Doolittle. I could have played all those parts, but I didn't look the part, and it wasn't in the cards for me. It wasn't bashert, as we say in the Hebrew. It wasn't meant to be. This was meant to be.
Well, I think it's worked out pretty good. You seem pretty happy. You've been smiling a lot today.
Yeah, it worked out beautifully. It was a heck of a career, may I say. To have achieved this fat little ugly kid from Brooklyn, you know, it's amazing. It's amazing. Sometimes I marvel.
Pinch yourself. Make sure it's true.
It's true.
Yeah, it's true.
It's still a thrill when we hear either my arrangements or Linda singing on a commercial. I mean, it never wears off.
Not for us.
For us, it doesn't wear off.
We're not blasé about it in any way, shape, or form.
We're going to have the top 10 Linda November jingles in just a moment, but first we're going to play a few recordings that you sang on, and these are hit recordings. How about Do You Know the Way to San Jose? Now, this is one of many Dionne Warwick records that you did backup vocals on.
That's right, and that's me and the great Valerie Simpson of Ashford and Simpson singing the Wo-Wos.
I'm not the best whoa-whoa-er, but...
That sounds pretty good.
Oh, okay, thank you. You're being very kind. Linda, you're the expert whoa-whoa-er. Can you do just a little whoa-whoa-whoa-whoa now?
Whoa-whoa-whoa-whoa-whoa-whoa-whoa-whoa-whoa. And Artie's
doing that. Wait a minute. Artie, I didn't know that was part of the arrangement there.
It sure is. It comes right after the bowl. Great Gary Chester on his bass drum.
I had a rock and roll record out called Flip Over You. Gary Chester was my drummer at Regent Sound Studios in New York.
May he rest in peace.
He was great. We should do a show about him someday, and maybe we will.
His son, Gary Chester, we're very dear old friends. He was a great sound engineer. We did a million jingles together.
And you were heard on After the Lovin' by Engelbert Humperdinck.
Everybody calls that those Linda November records. It's really all me.
Let's hear a little bit of After the Lovin' by Engelbert Humperdinck.
So I sing you to sleep after the lovin' with a song I just wrote yesterday, and I hope you can hear what the words and the music have to say. Thanks for taking me on a one-way. to the sun. And thanks for turning me into someone. And I know that my song isn't saying anything new. Oh, but after the loving,
and you are also on a record by Barbara Streisand called Stony End. Were you doing the session with Barbara?
We did it together. We were in Vegas. She was at the Hilton, which is now the International. Well, the International, rather, that became the Hilton, right?
Yeah. It was the International.
It was the International. Elvis used to be there. And we were with Burt Bacharach at the Riviera. So we used to hang out every night after our shows. Babs used to come over and we used to hang with her band and we used to hang together, and she said to us, let's do this album. So we went in and we recorded that. So we did that whole Stony End album in Vegas.
They didn't just do Stony End, which we're going to play with.
No, we did a lot of stuff on the album.
Stony End was the title song, was a top 10 hit for Barbara, and it was probably the closest that Barbara ever came to being a rock and roll singer, right?
You know, she wanted to be Carole King. That was her thing.
She wanted to be Carole King.
Intrigued with Carole that this was what she thought she should do.
But actually, this particular song was written by the late, great Laura Nyro.
She's a lot of work with, too, Laura.
Oh, you did drums on her second album.
This is a great song by Laura Nyro, sung by Barbara Streisand, and backup vocals by Linda November. This is Stony End. One more backup record that you did, and in fact, this was a big disco hit, and this song, there's no better accolade for a songwriter than to have his song become a hit in one decade, and then the next decade, and the next decade, and this has to be one of the most successful copyrights of all time, a song called Babyface. What can you tell us about the Babyface session?
Well, my dear friend Harold Wheeler, Uranger, and Miko Minardo, and Tony Bon Jovi. Actually, Tony Bon Jovi, you know, who had a recording studio, and he's also John Bon Jovi's first cousin. Wonderful engineer, nice guy, and Miko is an old friend. They were all very dear friends. Said, look, we want to do this disco thing, and we really need you to do it. I was so busy doing jingles, I had no interest, no time, enough already. But they begged me, and we'll do it late at night, 11 o'clock at night, blah, blah, blah. We'll give you your tuna fish sandwiches and your sour pickle and your Dr. Brown's cream soda. We did this, it was the Fife and Drum Bugle Corps. Marty did some stuff with them, a wonderful album called Bicentennial, wonderful disco stuff. He did a lot of stuff. I did, I guess, the first three albums, and I had the most fun. On Babyface, I sang all the parts, which was a riot. And then I used other girls, you know, on it because it started to get a bit much to do myself, you know, from sing four, double and triple it, third part, double, triple, second part, et cetera, et cetera.
Sounds like a lot of work.
But it turned out to be the mega hit. It was a thrill to go to Regine's and go to the discos and hear yourself, you know. It was a trip. It was fabulous.
The biggest problem was getting the name of the group, which was actually called The Wing and a Prayer, Fife and Drum Corps, on the label.
You got the cutest little baby.
I'm reading here that some of the other vocalists were, in addition to you, Vivian Cherry, Arlene Martel, and Helen Miles, I believe.
Yeah.
We have to get to the top 10 commercials that you've done. Number 10 is Hellman's.
At the party, bring out the flavor and bring out the zest. Just bring out the Hellman's and bring out the best.
I remember that one. Number 9, GE, General Electric.
GE, we bring good things to live in. We bring good things to life.
Number 8 is Windex.
Shine, Windex makes it shine. Windex lets you bring all the sun in, let it shine.
Number 7 is Wendy's.
Wendy's, oh God, you know what, I don't... What the hell was that jingle? I think you got me there.
Okay, well...
I've lost my mind. What?
Make one up. Wendy's, Wendy's. Oh, do the Beach Boys. Wendy, da-da-da-da-da-da. Okay.
When,
good enough. Good enough. Number 6 is McDonald's.
Which one? You deserve a break today, so get up and get away at McDonald's. We do it all for you. You're the one. Take it so long. We got a million of them.
Right.
9,000.
Number 5 is Burger King.
You
can't hold hands. You have with a Whopper or the...
That was that, and I did the arrangement for it.
That's right. Two all beef patties, two little cheese, that's one, and this doesn't seem to be fun.
That's McDonald's.
Wait a minute, that's McDonald's.
That's McDonald's. I have to, they all go into each other.
And she's got a photographic memory, ladies and gentlemen.
I always have it your way. Have it your way at Burger King.
Much better. Number 4 is Miller.
If you've got the time, we've got the beer. Miller tastes too good to hurry through. That's it.
Number 3 is Budweiser.
When you say Bud, you said it all.
And number 2, Coca-Cola.
I'd like to build the world a home and furnish it with love, but the other one was the Mean Joe Green.
Yeah, I remember that.
A Coke and a smile. That was another one. But of course, Teach the World to Sing is probably the most famous.
But far and away, ladies and gentlemen, the number 1 commercial done by our wonderful guest, Linda November, is Meow Mix. And Linda, what's the story behind Meow Mix?
I got the call from Lucas McFall, from Tom McFall, who wrote it, to come and do the spot. Now, when we do a spot, they always would show us the film. And that day, they didn't show us the film. And Jerry Delafamina, the genius in advertising, said, can't show it to you because you won't be able to sing. You'll be crying. So, okay, he hands me, it's meow, 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 meow. We sing the song. The girls come in. We do the underscore, the bridge, you know, for the voiceover. And then they say to me, you need to just look at, in those days, it was not a computer, it was a movieola. You have to look at the cat. We're not happy with the last meow of the picture. And they showed me the picture, and I looked at her, and she licked her chops, and then, meow. And the third time, they said, perfect. They came in, they spliced it. They handed us glasses of champagne and Kleenex tissues. Put it on, and it was meow, 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 meow. And I see this cat with my voice coming out. Oh, I started crying. And all of us were teary-eyed. And it was the most successful spot ever. And I did it exclusively for 17 years.
The one we're going to play is the original one, right?
Yes, that's the original.
We interrupt this show for a word from our sponsor.
Meow, 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 meow.
New Meow Mix from Purina. The cat food with 3 separate flavors in one package. 3 flavors that cats love best. Tuna, liver, and chicken. Meow Mix tastes so good, cats ask for it by name.
And that is surely the cat's meow.
It's iconic. It's world famous. They know it in every country and every language.
Do you do meows in different languages?
You can.
Could you do 5 more? Before we close the show, could you do about 10 seconds of some live meows just for us?
Meow, 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 meow.
Okay.
I'll send you the bill in the morning.
Thank you very much, and I'm sure it will be pretty big, too. Well, Linda November and Artie Schreck, the two of you are so very special to me, And hopefully, we have let people know that the music world is not just build singers, not just songwriters, not just producers, but there are background singers and there are arrangers who also help make the world go round. And without you, without the backup singers, without the arrangers, it would be very difficult.
Ronnie, there's one thing, too, as well that you might want to talk about. Besides the background singers and the arrangers, there are the sidemen. As Artie wrote, I call them sidemen, but I'm proud to have them by my side.
Right.
The greatest musicians in the world on these sessions, and without them playing the notes that Artie wrote for us, for the sidemen, the singers,
right,
and for the musicians such as George Young and Bucky Pizzarelli and Tony Mottola and Milt Hinton and George Davidi and Bernie Glow and Saul Goodman and Gary Chester and Billy Cipher, and you could go George Devins, Jerry Fisher, you could mention all of the greatest players, Zoot Sims, Al Cohn.
They didn't become famous, but they were probably as good as any
right.
of the guys that became famous.
John Faddis, Marvin Sam, the greatest players in the world. They should get the recognition that they're due.
We're going to close the show now. You did a concert with Artie, the two of you. Was this 2008? You did the Suncoast?
Yes, it was.
The song that I picked to close the show with is a duet with both you, Linda, and Artie singing together and making beautiful music with a song that was popularized by the chairman of the board, Come Fly With Me. Linda and Artie, I thank you from the bottom of my heart. Right now, I'm going to say bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Remembers the oldies, the 50s and 60s.